We all want a business like Netflix or Amazon Prime. Businesses where once a customer engages with them, it becomes automatic and a part of their lifestyle from then on. But how do you build that forever transaction? I'm Robbie Kelman Baxter, and I have been studying subscription and membership models for nearly 20 years. In this podcast, my guests and I share the secrets and strategies of the membership economy. Join us for Subscription Stories, True Tales from the Trenches. Zumba is a phenomenon. Since its founding in 2001, the addictive fitness dance program with a Latin beat has taken the world by storm. As of 2022, the company claimed 12 million people taking Zumba classes weekly at 110,000 locations in over 125 countries. At its core is the Zumba Instructor Network, a monthly membership program created to give instructors ongoing support and tools for success. It includes an unlimited, never-expiring teaching license, as well as monthly music and choreography, marketing tools, and access to the community. Today's guest, Yael Dornbush, is the Chief Subscription Officer at Zumba, responsible for managing what she calls a prosumer subscription. In our conversation, she explains why Zumba built their first subscription around instructors rather than students, why they launched a second subscription specifically for students, and the principles they use to balance the needs of these two constituencies. Yael, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Robbie. I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too. I'm really looking forward to diving into things. But before we go too far, can you share how you came to be a subscription practitioner? What was the journey that led you to running a subscription business?
Yeah, so let me tell you a little bit about myself. I started my career in brand building, brand management across a variety of brands, mainly passion brands, love brands. Those are brands that people really have an emotional connection with. It's part of their identity. They want people to know that they're aligned with that brand. So I worked in brand management for IAMS Dog Food, where we had pet lovers that really aligned themselves with I feed my pet IAMS, and they wanted to be part of that community. So community was a big factor too. Also worked in fine fragrances, luxury fragrances. So managed Dolce & Gabbana, Gucci. Again, brands that people loved, wanted to talk to, and wanted to identify themselves with. Then came back to Zumba. I had worked for Zumba way at the beginning. We can discuss that later. But came back to Zumba, which was also a love brand. I remember going to trade shows and people would be like, you work for Zumba? And they would hug me, because to them, it was a brand that made them happy, made them explore their wellness journey, improve their wellness journey. So I was working for Zumba. I established the marketing department and was working on a variety of our consumer products, also our subscription product and our apparel product at this time. And I had the opportunity to move up and lead the biggest revenue line for the business, which was our subscription product, our Zumba Instructor Network, which is a membership where we invite our instructors to get their music, their choreography, their whole business suite to become successful at what they do. So I moved on to lead the business side, also the marketing side, and really the value equation for our subscription business. And it ended just being something I loved because it was the perfect unison of brands, brand building, love, and a business model that showcased our passion through membership and recurring revenue.
Yeah, it's so interesting because a lot of great brands use subscription models, or subscription models often require really strong brands because of the duration. Is your models a little bit different than a lot of other subscription businesses that we've had on the show? Can you explain sort of how Zumba works and what your business model is? You talked about subscription being the biggest part of the business. What are the other components and how do the pieces fit together?
Yeah, so at the core of the Zumba business model, we train and we license instructors to teach Zumba classes. And then we offer the Zumba Instructor member, the Zumba Instructor Network membership, where we give them the business suite to be successful in what they do. So we know that they need music for their classes, choreography for their classes, teaching skills, continuing education opportunities. So we bring them in, we train them, we offer them the subscription to remain successful, and then it really becomes their own business. They can teach anywhere, they can charge however they want, And they monetize the consumers, right? It's their students. So it's really a, we call them prosumers, the core of our members. Really, they're, I think we were doing the gig economy before the gig economy. So anyone who loves dancing, loves fitness, wellness, Zumba was their ability to create their own business. And then we also have an apparel line, which the majority of sales is also part to our instructors, but also to their students and their fans. And then finally, about a year and a half ago, we launched an at-home app subscription where people can take at-home Zumba classes. And it also is another tool that allows our instructors to have visibility with the new consumers to find their classes. So that's kind of at the core of the wheel of the Zumba business.
And can you explain what you mean by prosumer?
I would say prosumers are an average person, an average consumer. They're not looking for a full-time career, or they may be looking for a full-time career, but it's most of them are really looking for a part-time way to make additional income, to showcase their passion. But what we provide is a financial benefit for them to explore that passion. We are B2C, but the offer we offer is more of a professional membership. So it's prosumer, not necessarily really a B2B offering.
Okay. I love that word. And I'm thinking about other prosumers. I did a fair amount of work way back for a company that's part of Intuit, PayCycle. And that was for very small businesses. And it was the accounting services for that. And I think we use that term too. It was a slightly different meaning, but the same idea that when you're selling to somebody who's sort of straddling the buying on my own account and buying for work, there's some different dynamics. And I'm curious why you focused on instructors as your primary subscriber rather than on the students. And also why you went with a subscription rather than some of the other models that I think are very popular, like a license or a franchise.
Yeah, so we'll go back a little bit in history to answer that. So Zumba started with Beto Perez. He's the creator of Zumba. He was teaching Zumba classes and started in Miami, teaching them very successfully. And then in the creation of the business, we created a direct response business. So it was an infomercial selling VHSs originally, then DVDs for an at-home consumption. That drove huge brand awareness. And all of a sudden, we started getting calls from people, let's call them prosumers, aspirational people wanting to have their own financial journey, and they wanted to start teaching the classes themselves. So we hosted two, at that time we called them certifications, where we would train them. You could become an instructor and get the certification to teach your own Zumba classes. And then all of a sudden we started getting emails and calls requesting for, well, a big part of Zumba is the Latin music, and Latin music was booming at the time, or had started booming at the time, but they didn't know where to find what's the right song, what's the right choreography, how do I keep it simple, how do I follow the Zumba formula, what are the best cueing techniques, because in Zumba you don't cue verbally, you cue with motion. So by listening to our consumer, we realized that there was a need, not just for a certification like other fitness companies do, but really for ongoing support. So that's where, kind of listening to our consumer, we saw that, yes, we train them. We do license them because they get the license to teach at that point, but only for a limited time to remain licensed and to really be successful in what they do and make it easy for them to teach. Then they need the membership or the subscription to get there. So it was kind of how the chips landed, how we saw the insight, and we were able to structure it that way, which is not the way most fitness certifications work.
Yeah. So you follow demand.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of approach than a lot of the fitness. We had a CrossFit on the podcast. We had Eric Rosa a couple of years ago now, who was, I think until recently, the owner of CrossFit, talking about their model, which is the membership is really focused on the end user, the people coming to the boxes for their workout. So it's interesting to think about that and whose problem you're solving. We talk a lot about this idea of a forever promise. What's the ongoing challenge that you're trying to help people with? What opportunity are you helping them to achieve? What problem are you helping them to solve? And in your case, maybe you have double, but the emphasis is on the instructor.
I think that's been kind of the push and pull in our business. I think for our instructors, our mission is to make our instructors successful. And for that mission to pay off, we do need to drive brand awareness and drive students to their classes, right? That's why they want to align themselves with our brand and our membership. But at the same time, we don't monetize those consumers, right? So it's our investment to drive brand awareness, brand trial, to the benefit of our instructors so that they can have great class attendance, whereby we know in that way we can attain more instructors and a ongoing membership business.
And so I like that you kind of talk about the importance of both parts. Even if you only have one subscription, you need both parts to thrive. That's the goal. And you have to provide that air cover for your member instructors. You've also recently begun offering a subscription app for home workouts. Can you walk me back to when you made that decision and what some of the considerations were as you thought about balancing the needs of the instructors that you know very well and you've been serving for a long time, and then the consumers, and also about revenue implications of the revenue that comes from an individual instructor is by nature going to be much greater than for any one customer, one student. So take me back and maybe walk me through this decision as it came up, and then what you decided to do and what were some of the things that you were considering as you made this important decision.
This had been in conversation for years. And for many years, we thought it would pull away from our instructor success. And that's why we really shied away from it, right? Like if we had our own at-home product, would we be competing with our instructors where our mission and our forever promise to them had been, we're going to make you successful. So fast forward to post-COVID, when more people were working out at home. And then we also had consumer research that told us the brand awareness for Zumba is really high. And more people know the Zumba name. But we were seeing that fewer people really understood what Zumba is. The fitness landscape had become more populated, more competitive. So we needed a way to break through and be relevant, make sure that people didn't just know the Zumba name, the Zumba brand, but also understood what it was. Why was it for them? And also the last insight that kind of drove us there is we also saw that the biggest trial barrier was intimidation. Them not feeling like, okay, maybe I'm not a dancer. I don't think that's for me. When really the Zumba class is come, move, be yourself. It's not about doing the perfect dance, and you're going to get a workout and you're going to have fun and you're going to find yourself. So how could we better convey that in a controlled way? So after a lot of back and forth, we saw the potential of an at-home app to help us in a variety of ways. Most importantly, at the core, though, was in a variety of ways that could still be beneficial to our instructor business, to our instructor forever promise and membership, while growing the Zumba brand and growing that halo like you described before. So what the app enabled us to do was first brought in distribution, right? Now you have one more place at home where if you tend to work out at home majority or only at home, now you can find a Zumba subscription and do your own Zumba classes in a way that we control that experience. So we knew that that first experience, that first trial could be great at home and you wouldn't have the intimidation factor. All of our content on the Zumba app, just a side note, does have a call to action to find a local class, a live class. Because at the end of the day, it's designed to be a funnel into our instructors' classes. We know that there's nothing, you can love working out at home, but there's nothing like an in-person Zumba class. So this would be a feeder, a funnel to get them there. It also allowed us to have, it has two sides, the app. It has the at-home subscription, but then by having the find a class mention in the at-home workouts, we also have a local class locator. So it gave us better way for instructors or for consumers to discover not just a Zumba class, but where to find their local one after that. So that was kind of the second strategy that we aimed to achieve there. Like I said before, we didn't have a direct relationship with the consumer. So by having this at-home app, we finally could see for ourselves, right? Not just to our instructors, what music were they playing? What type of content did they prefer? How often did they engage? So that we can continue catering our Zumba product or Zumba class, but also the benefits and the bundles that we give to our instructors so they can be successful with their own consumers.
When did you make this decision?
We launched a year and a half ago, so probably 2021, let's say, by the time when the decision started being made, 2022, maybe.
Okay. So it took a little while to make the decision.
Many years.
And why did it take so long?
It was really at the core. It was the decision of how do we make sure that we're not competing with our own instructors, that we're not competing with our own business, right? Because imagine if, I think that a great example is, imagine if Uber has their Uber drivers, right? Imagine that now Uber had Uber corporate drivers. Why would you need to, Uber drivers might think, well, if Uber has their own Uber driver that's not third party, why do I need to book an Uber instructor? Why are they going to feed me the rides if they can take them themselves? So we really had to design the at-home app in a way that delivered enough value to a student at home so that they would subscribe and discover, but also delivered enough value and limited the competition with our Zumba instructors and with our Zumba instructor network benefits.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're not the only one that's had these issues. I mean, I see so many subscription businesses and frankly, other, I mean, your example of Uber is a good one. There's a lot of franchises where there are franchise-owned stores and corporate-owned stores, often even in the same region. And there's good reasons for this. It's good learning and training and all of that. But there's always a feeling of, are you going to cherry pick the best customers or the best locations? There's also an issue, usually it goes the other way, but there's often an issue of the middleman, the retailer, the wholesaler, the dealership that owns the real relation, even in the world of cable TV, right? Until the last 10 or 15 years, most content creators, the broadcast networks and the like, and the studios didn't know who was actually watching their stuff because that information was owned by the cable company, the movie theaters, and by offering direct streaming, they were bypassing their most valuable distributors. So it is, I asked you, why did it take so long? Not because I thought you took an inordinately long amount of time, but because these are the hard decisions that you have to make when you're doing a subscription.
Yeah. And there's also like, it's about really knowing the audiences and what they want and what they value. Like think about also the dynamics of your competitors and at-home subscription, right? Like content subscriptions, Netflix, Spotify, right? Ranging between $9 and $20. And most of, at least for at-home fitness, that was kind of the comparison. And then the amount of content that we thought they would expect would be really high. So here we have our Zumba instructor network where our instructor members get choreography and music for a class every month, but you have the at-home consumer who, based on their experience with other at-home brands, we thought would expect so much more content at a much lower price. So how do you get that value equation and that trade-off to make sense from a business standpoint? Those were the risks and the hard conversations that we needed to have to figure out what was the right way to leverage the at-home market, create the right subscription model, create the right feeder system for our instructors with this tool of an app, but in the right way where it didn't cannibalize the rest of our business.
And were you able to test some of these ideas before you rolled them out? Or how did your technology work? Was it easy to test and experiment, or did you have to kind of go all in when you were ready?
I think we set some really important principles and non-negotiables. Before technology, I would say the most important thing was really understanding what did each subscriber want, need, and what were the non-negotiables. So for instance, for our instructors, we know that what they value the most is their monthly music and choreography. And when we were working to figure out what would be the right content for the Zumba app, there was a lot of conversations around, let's not just give them the at-home workout, but people love Zumba music. Why don't we give them the music to also create their own playlists? And we had to do a lot of consumer research to and know and stand by, you know what? We understand that sounds great, but we know that our instructors are going to see a threat behind their students having the music, having the ability to create their own playlists. So why would anyone need to become an instructor if you can get the same content and the same music that an instructor could? So it was really about understanding those non-negotiables And now we see that, so we had to test into it, right? Start with a limited amount of content, start with a limited amount of videos, maybe some beginner videos, some rhythm videos, and really start seeing, do you need a weekly drop? How are they engaging with the content? So I would say the best advice is start from an MVP that is rooted in the true needs of both audiences, protecting those non-negotiables for your original audience, and then slowly test and learn. Pricing was another one, right? We don't have a lot of pricing flexibility with our instructor network. A lot of that is because they're a very tight-knit community. They talk, they engage, and they have never been open to, why would you charge this country more than this other country? Or why would you charge me differently than someone who became an instructor a month ago? So that's been something we know and we protect for our instructor community. With consumers, we saw, okay, we think this is a reasonable price point, but we could segment our testing and our acquisition strategy to better optimize for that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I like what you said, and I want to bring that out of, you started by protecting your existing audience. And so maybe there's a risk that the initial launch of the new offering wouldn't be compelling enough because it's limited music and limited features and lots of marketing of your in-person classes. And maybe people don't like that, but it seems like it's worked in the last 18 months since you launched. What are some of the things you've learned, or what has evolved since you launched?
Yeah, so we've learned a lot. I'll mention a few. It definitely has worked. We've achieved over 1 million downloads. We've increased our membership size by around 50%. So from a business standpoint, it's delivering on what we think and what we expected. But we've also learned a lot, like I was saying, about content, about pricing. We've also learned that there's such different consumers and they expect very different things. So our at-home consumers, we've learned, require a bigger level of journeys, personalization, because they're seeking very different things than our instructor network. Let me explain that a little bit. So for our instructor network, we understand that when they come into Zumba, they're looking for three things mainly: income, recognition, and belonging. And through the years and through our research, we've understood at the core, everyone in the Zumba instructor network is looking for income, recognition, and belonging. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't segments and that there's segmentation, right? Some lean more for looking for belonging. They want to be part of the brand, but there is always a level of income and recognition, etc. So a lot of our brand positioning, our forever promise, our journeys, and our personalization are catered to that. Now, as we look at what we've learned from our at-home consumers or our app consumers, we see that they're coming with very different needs and they require very different acquisition strategies, funnels, journeys to make sure that we can retain them. So we see the three needs being mind, body, and soul. So you have those that come with body, right? And that's in fitness, that will always be the best performing acquisition strategy, right? Weight loss, achieve your wellness goal. It may not be your best churn retention strategy or retention strategy because you need to deliver on that from a product standpoint. So we need the product. What is the journey? What are the videos to make sure that once they come with a body expectation, how do we get them? How do we retain them? And then soul are those that just love fun and dance. So what is the right content? What are the right messages for them? Versus those that come with mind, they're looking for stress. They're looking for confidence to build their own confidence. So we've learned that it requires a lot more personalization, a lot more different offerings than we had expected, which goes to the value equation and the resources that we can dedicate to the product.
That's interesting. So for the prosumer, those three sources of value, income, recognition, and belonging, they all want all of them for the most part.
In different levels.
At different levels. But on the consumer side, they might come in for one and care a lot less about the other two. Is that
correct?
Fair? Or
yeah. Correct. I think they're looking more for either an emotional need or a physical need. And it's about how we deliver on that.
It's also interesting because it's on the consumer side, it's in a lot of ways, as you said, it's an acquisition strategy and an onboarding strategy, removing barriers around not being sure what this is, not being confident, not being sure it's for them. Are there onboarding activities that the new subscription accomplishes? Or what is the onboarding process whereby you know that somebody's going to stay? So a lot of times someone comes in the door, And you, as the person running marketing and running the subscription, you could say, I would bet money that this person is going to get a lot of value here and they're going to stay because of these behaviors or these attributes that they share with other successful prosumers or consumers. And then there's other people that come in and you might say, huh, I wonder why that person's here. And I'm not that confident that they're going to stay. I'm not sure that they're coming with the right expectation. I'm not sure that we can deliver what they're hoping for. Their budget might be different, what have you. And how do you onboard people to maximize the likelihood of them staying?
Yeah, I think for the app itself, what's been interesting is like a lot of apps, a thorough sign-up process, right? When they come in has been shown to not only help in acquisition, but also in that retention. So when you sign up to the app or as you're signing up to the app, understanding what music do you like? Are you, what level do you consider yourself a beginner? Are you more experienced? Do you prefer dancing? Are you looking for more fitness moves? So understanding the consumer through the sign-up flow, which in our benefit has performed well for the app, and then making sure that once they complete that, they sign up, then the content that we recommend, the emails that we send, right? The instructors that we provide to them are meeting those needs is important. So for instance, we are seeing that a lot of the consumers that are coming into the app, many more than we expected are beginners. They're really coming from couch to class. They haven't worked out before. They're not even like in tune what dancing is. So making sure that now we have a great beginner's product, a beginner's journey that makes them feel not just lose the intimidation, but understand and make sure that that first class is doable, that you feel you accomplished, and then gamifying that with recognition and with rewards has worked really well from an onboarding standpoint for the app consumers. From an instructor standpoint, we have a few more touch points and they're a little different, right? We have the training itself where they interact with one of our Zumba education specialists, which are the trainers who train the trainers. And through that, not just the sign-up process can we learn about them, but we can also get feedback at the training from our Zumba education specialists, after the training with a survey that we do. And then based on that, on their dashboard, we ask them questions and we can start testing. Okay, this person came in, were they looking for, do they not come from a fitness background? So they need more tools that are going to help them be successful. Let's give them more teaching tools and test into what are the engagement tools and content that we need for them is what's really worked well on that side as well.
Yeah. How do you balance the different needs between the consumer and the prosumer? Do you have guidelines around how much you invest in each side? In terms of product roadmap or marketing efforts or support resources, how do you balance the needs of these two related but different groups?
Yeah, from a business standpoint, we have dedicated teams for both groups, depending on the scale of the business right now. And then to balance the businesses, it's really important, like I said before, for us to have some set principles so that we're protecting the business yet ensuring their success. So as I said before, like knowing our audiences, making sure we have the right data, the right measurement, protecting those non-negotiables, but having the ability to, we've only been doing at home for a year and a half. So what's working right, what's not, and not just focusing on those paid subscribers, but we came into this knowing that this was going to be a funnel to get them into our instructors' classes. So making sure that we are measuring their whole experience, the whole funnel, and what's working, what's not to optimize is an ongoing conversation. We don't have the resources set as we learn and we optimize that. Continuing to test as well, what is the best way to integrate our instructor business into the at-home app and how do we make that a win-win? So it's kind of an ongoing conversation. And based on the business results and the ongoing learnings that we have from each audience.
What advice do you have for other businesses that have multiple channels for their subscriptions, particularly around ownership of the end customer?
They're similar to what I said before, but definitely know your consumer, know your consumers, know their segments. What are they looking for? What do they value? And then based on that, like you would say, Robbie, what would be your forever promise so that you can deliver not just acquire them, but but deliver on that benefit, make sure that you can retain them. So it comes down to really listening to them, understanding them, and continuing to do that because that morphs as time goes on. The second thing I would say is don't underestimate the value of your journeys. Make sure that you are talking to them after that sign up, onboarding them correctly, and helping them navigate your bundle, the ongoing benefits that it provides, the ongoing content that it provides, or whatever it is, in a way that's catered to that audience. And lastly, and I think this is really just based on our experiences, don't be afraid. Like, this was a very big risk for us. And with the right strategies, with the right time, with the right ability to MVP and test and scale, fine-tuning what's the right dial for each has helped us really achieve a win-win proposition for another distribution channel, another way for us to have students find Zumba while driving them into our core instructor business, to their classes and to that side of the business.
This is so interesting. I could go on for a long time, but I'm mindful of the time. Do you have time for a speed round?
Let's do it.
First subscription you ever had?
First subscription I ever had, Netflix.
Your favorite subscription outside of Zumba right now?
I'm going to say it's my gym membership.
Your favorite dog breed, back to your time at IAMS?
Oh, imagine, I just got my first dog. Perfect timing. He's been with us for a week. He's a mini Bernedoodle.
Cute. Favorite song for a dance break?
I'm going to say it's Gasolina by Daddy Yankee. It always ramps anything up.
Love it. Yeah, Elle Doornbusch, thank you so much for being a guest on Subscription Stories.
Abby, thank you so much for having me. I'll see you around.
That was Yael Doornbusch, Zumba's Chief Subscription Officer. For more about Zumba, go to zumba.com. And for more about Subscription Stories, as well as a transcript of my conversation with Yael, go to robbiekelmanbaxter.com/podcast. Also, I have a favor to ask. If you like what you heard, please take a minute to go over to Apple Podcasts or Apple iTunes and leave a review. Mention Yael in this episode if you especially enjoyed it. Reviews are how listeners find our podcast, and we appreciate each one. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening to Subscription Stories.